Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Seth Partnow is in the building. The absolute legend of analytics in basketball. I mean, like the most publicly facing, analytics executive that used to work for a team. Because Hollinger, like, he fucking rose too high. Like, fuck that guy, right?
I think Ben Falk has sort of by choice been background facing, but yes, fine. If he wanted, like, I will take credit for being the most online of the for better or worse.
Oh my God. So Seth and I today, we are doing a 2019 NBA draft redraft, and oh boy, This is a fun draft because it has not turned out well, I think is the fairest way to put it thus far. I got to four and had no idea what to do. What point did you have no idea what to do?
I think that's right. And there's like, it's also when do you start saying, okay, well, it's reasonable to take, it would have been reasonable to take Matisse Thybulle here, and that's
a
hard one. Or if you get even deeper, it would have been reasonable to take Lu Dort here. And I think when we get into some of the second round guys, like, there's some dynamics that we need to acknowledge as well about, you know, why some guys get drafted and some guys don't. Was this the Servetus draft?
No, the Servetus draft.
Yeah.
I think it was. that was a wild one. I mean, look, like, all due respect to Didi, who I think is still on the, like, Pelicans roster, but that was a wild one. By the way, this draft features the wildest of them all, right?
Oh yeah, the legend Alan Smiley.
Yeah, the Smiley Geach stash in the Bay Area for years upon years, basically.
The getting leveraged in order to do it too was the best part.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Okay, let's just set some ground rules here. We're gonna go, my theory is to 20. And you have an hour, so we're just gonna go for an hour, and if we get to 20, we get to 20, basically. I would think that we will get to 20 in an hour, but I don't put anything past us when we start talking.
Right.
Number two, this is not just based off of what they are right now and what they have done already. This is still something of a projection in terms of what their value is going to be in the future. Now, Someone like Cam Reddish is going to be the perfect example of this. Like, I would almost guarantee, because the structure of this episode is going to be that you go first and then I go second and then you go and then I go, and we'll just go back and forth, right? And then we'll talk about each pick after. But I would almost guarantee that I'm going to be the person to take Cam Reddish, just knowing you.
I mean, and I think when we get there, kind of the reasons why we'll get to. Now, the interesting thing is that some of your arguments, especially if we're defining it in terms of, like, you know, value either as players or as kind of trade, as being involved in trades, like, some of the stuff that I'm going to complain about is actually works in his favor. So, but we'll get there.
Yeah. But, like, trying to figure out what Cam Reddish is going to be in 3 years is confounding on some level, because he has not been very good so far. But then there are these, like, tantalizing flashes. Like,
he made jump shots in a couple playoff games, though. So,
yeah,
he's on his way.
And then there are guys that are injured. Like, DeAndre Hunter has not played a ton of basketball, despite the fact that he's looked good. And then we're going to get to the guy at the top here. Come on, man. I'm working up to a segue part now. Okay. Come on.
Sorry.
So there's another guy at the top here that has obviously become the biggest injury lightning rod, I would say, in the NBA at this point, in terms of what you think his value is long term. So that's a good 5-minute spiel on what our plan is. I'm going to give you the floor to take number one, unless you want me to do it. Like, I'm okay either way.
No, I mean, I think the other thing we do have to consider is, I think we have to do a little bit of kind of adjusting for what was knowable at the time. Like, yeah. I think if you were really going to say who's going to have the better career from here between Zion and Ja, I think you probably have to lean Ja.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, frankly, we don't know if Zion's ever going to be on the court again. Like it's early morning for you. And if you saw the news that came out today, it came up an hour ago. Yeah. He is, you know, continuing to lightly rehab. It's not great. Not great for a guy to have played basically half a season in his first 3 years. And it's not like an Embiid situation where he has an injury and just sits out. It's like he tries to play and then thing goes wrong, has surgery, tries to come back and fails.
The Zion's frame in general is just like not something that seems human given the level of explosiveness that emanates from that frame.
Right.
And by the way, like we could say something similar about the guy that I think both you and I are going to like take at number one at this point. Ja Morant, like his body mechanics are unnatural in a very strange way, just in regard to like my heart drops every time that he leaps in traffic. Like I get terrified every time Ja Morant goes up.
Like straight legged landing.
Right. I'm terrified. So there's some of that to this too. Like I don't know, man, but go ahead.
You know, if we're sort of going back in time and having what's happened so far to sort of evaluate with, I still kind of think you take Zion first. Like, I think that he's kind of, you know, especially as so you say, let's, like.
Let's jump in. Let's just do
yeah,
it then.
Yeah.
So,
no, I still think you take.
Number one pick, Seth Partnow, you go.
I still think you take Zion first just because, you know, you've seen that he's a destroyer of worlds when he actually plays. And, you know, I don't know if we can say we'll run his career 10 times, but I think if the median injury outcome is going to be better than the actual has been, I think.
Yeah.
As played, it's not good, but this is almost getting back to like Oden and Durant, right? Like Oden was really, really damn Zion has been better when he's played than Morant has been when he's played, which wasn't quite the case for Durant and Oden. But like when he played, Oden was good enough to easily justify a first overall selection. And I feel that way about Zion. And I just don't know if we can, you know, completely accept all of the post injuries as givens, you know?
So, yeah, it's hard. On some level, like Zion has always struggled with picking up minor injuries. Like in his senior year of high school, he missed a month of his senior year due to, if I remember correctly, like a sprained knee of some sort. At Duke, he missed a little bit of time because his shoe literally exploded on the court. These little things have crept up over the years. Like this is not, I think that like he had some sort of like fracture on like a wrist or like a hand or something like that going back in high school. Like there have been these little things in the past to where nothing ever seemed chronic at the time, but it's one of those like confirmation bias things to where if you wanted to see that if you wanted to see Zion Williamson's going to be an injury risk, the signs were there. Like he did consistently miss games throughout the course of his high school career, but none of it was ever chronic enough to where you believe like, okay, New Orleans, they just hired like Aaron Nelson from the Phoenix Suns to run their like performance department. And you think that he gets with a strength and conditioning and diet program, like it's all going to be fine. Like there were a number of things that would make you believe that Zion would be fine. There are a number of signs that would make you believe that Zion was not going to be fine. I think at the end of the day, though, like, Zion's really incredibly good. And it's impossible to overstate how good he was as a 20-year-old last year. He was so fucking good. Yeah. Like, he averaged 27 points and, like, 8 rebounds and was the best force going toward the basket in the NBA. He's, like, one of the only players in the league that can be a legitimate, true post-up threat because he's so quick and so dominant. Like, Zion Williamson breaks my brain when he's on a basketball court, like, consistently.
I think, without hyperbole, you could make a case that Zion is the most, like, when he was, like, when he's been on the floor, it's the most destructive rim attacking force the NBA has seen since Wilt Chamberlain. You can make that.
Yeah.
It's the graph that I've tweeted out a number of times. If you look at the, like, restricted area attempts per 100 possessions, he is about, you know, the guys who for their career are kind of the elites are around 12. He's up around 20.
Yeah, it's insane. Like,
that's taking into account both the shot attempts and getting fouled. So, you know, just it's and that includes, by the way, that includes, like, you know, some pretty good Shaq seasons, and we don't have full data for all of Shaq's career, but based on kind of free throw rates and other stuff like that, like, I think we have a pretty good sense of where Shaq would have been, and Zion is still, like, shooting 40, like, getting to the rim 40% is more often than Shaq would have.
It's fucking crazy. It's absolutely nuts.
And to add to that, I think, you know, just to, especially picking at the top of the draft, what are you aiming for? You're aiming for eliteness, right? You're not aiming for, so 60 games of elite is substantially better for that, those purposes, than 82 games of almost, but not quite elite, to my thinking.
Yeah.
So, like, you're talking about, okay, he's going to, you know, it's the Joel Embiid thing. He's going to miss 20 games. Is he on the floor in the playoffs? If he is, great. That's what we need. We don't care if he, like, if he misses back-to-backs for in, you know, January, who cares? I think that is for as good as Ja has been. And frankly, since we've talked about doing this pod over the last 10 days or so, it's like, it's almost like he knew we were discussing this. It's like, don't forget. And he's just, I mean, he's been just absurd for the last week and a half. So it makes me a little bit of pause, but I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment.
It's 100% right. Having said that, so I'm up at number two here.
Yeah. RJ Barrett. No.
Okay. I'm not taking RJ Barrett. I'm taking Ja Morant. I would take Ja Morant at number one at this point. And this comes as someone who has been as steadfast and strong up until, like, the last month or so, that Zion is the guy that I would still take in 2019. I think he's unbelievable. I think that the elite level that Zion has reached is just so much better than anything we've seen from Ja so far. The last month and a half, the leap is real. Like, the big thing with me with Ja was, you kind of saw it in some playoff moments that the Grizzlies have played over the last year, 2 years, like big games late in the season and everything, when teams started to game plan against him, that teams would essentially just go under screens, and he was not a consistent enough shooter to where he could beat those, like, defensive structures regularly. He couldn't necessarily create his own jump shot efficiently enough to be a real end of game threat that I think would make some game winners, but wouldn't be able to do it consistently enough to be able to lead the Grizzlies to a title or something like that, right? So far this year, Ja Morant is averaging 25 points a game, shooting 49% from the field and 40% from three on 4 attempts per game. Not a crazy volume from three. Most of those 4 attempts per game are pull-ups. He's making just enough of them to keep defenders honest now, to where I think that over the course of the next few years, I actually think Ja Morant is going to be a legitimate end-of-game closer that the Grizzlies can count on. And to me, with that being the case, look, Zion and Ja are both, like, defensive nightmares right now. Like, we can just call that out. Like, they're both really bad on that end. So this conversation, I think we just like throw out the defensive side. Do you agree?
I will say again, this is contradicting picking Zion once. Like, I feel like you can get away with, especially with the willingness of teams to play kind of a second point guardish guy to be a, if you paired him with a Caruso or a Beverly or someone right. of that ilk, and you know, Tyus Jones is just a little bit on smaller guards at least, then you can mitigate sort of bad your lead guard being a bad defender in a way that your guy who is probably best as a five, you can't.
Yeah, like I would also make the case though that like if Zion figures it out on defense in terms of like conditioning and rotations, like his upside is much higher. I would also say that in the playoffs, teams are just going to hunt Ja to some extent, right? Like they're just going to try and get him switched on. You know, if you're playing Kawhi Leonard, whenever they play the Clippers in the playoffs, right? Like the Clippers are just going to hunt these screening actions to get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard matched up on Ja Morant. Right, that's going to happen.
I'm pre-annoyed for the soft switching we're going to see in the playoffs already.
It's going to happen. This is what it is.
Like they're running a ball screen that is like 30 feet from the basket, going parallel to the basket. Why do you need to switch? Don't just fight through and
right.
Anyway, that's something for Mo and I to bitch about continuously on Nerder.
I guess that what I would say is like they both give back stuff defensively to the point where like I don't even know that it's worth diving into the defense when making this pick. Yeah. I think it's purely about like who do you think is going to be the guy that you can trust offensively when he's on the court? I would take Zion. I would. Like I think that I would trust Zion at the end. Maybe not at the end of the game. I might rather have Ja Morant like create a shot at the end of games now, but for the course of 38 minutes or whatever he's going to play in the playoffs, I think I'd rather have Zion Williamson because I think that the pressure he puts on the rim is better. I can't trust Zion to stay healthy. I can't do it. Like, I feel bad about it, and I think that Ja has closed the difference in terms of what they look like when they are elite and when they are at their best to where I'm willing to make that trade-off now. Like, I'm willing to say, okay, Ja Morant has been – the fourth best guard in the NBA this year, something like that. The third best guard, like in that ballpark. Like Trae Young has actually been like sneaky incredible this year, even though the Hawks have not been very good. Like he's been phenomenal across the board. Obviously, Stephen Curry I think is number one, but all the other MVP candidates are bigs right now, like Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic. Maybe DeMar DeRozan, I think, would stand out like as a guard, but he's not really the kind of guy we're talking about in this conversation, I think.
It's worth pointing out that like since getting off to a rough start, James Harden has been really good for the last 6 weeks or so. But yeah, it's sort of easy. This is something that happens. The guy gets off to a bad start of a season and everyone sort of forgets about him. Or someone gets off to a good start of the season and he just is sort of assumed to be that guy for the rest of the year, but we'll talk about that.
Harden, Harden played himself into shape.
Yeah.
Like Harden was like out of shape to start the year, and now he's back to being James Harden, which is really good.
Yeah.
Look, put it this way. There's no way you can say that over the course of the full season, accounting for everything, James Harden has been a more effective player than Ja Morant.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think you're right.
I would take Ja over both of the Utah guys. I would take Ja over Chris Paul right now, I think, like in terms of just effectiveness this year. Not to say Chris has been bad, but like Chris is another all-NBA guy, and I think I would take Ja Morant over Chris Paul right now.
Is Ja Morant getting Bismack Biyombo to double-doubles?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
And,
that's a real good point.
Before the Raptors fans yell at me again, I know that Kyle Lowry did it too 6 years ago, but that wasn't Bismack Biyombo signed off the street. That was like recent lottery pick Bismack Biyombo. Anyway, sorry. I digress.
But Chris Paul, the thing with Chris Paul this year is that the shooting has not been quite as elite as what it's been in the past. He's still a much better defender. than John Morant is. So there are trade-offs. Like, I think that that's the class of player, though, that Morant is playing in right now. I would not say that he's like a top five MVP candidate, but if I went to 10, I don't think I'd get to 10 before I got to Ja.
I mean, you know, the way I would put it is, you know, I like to think of the league in tiers, and like, as of right now, I'm going to have to think long and hard about whether like Ja goes in tier two next year. If like the season ended today, I would have to, and that's like a top 15, top 20 type player. I'd have to think long and hard about that. Like, that's on the level of like the sort of the Paul George, Jimmy Butler, like Chris Paul level of guys. And like, that's just, it's one of those honored to be nominated kind of things. Just even that he's played well enough to even be in that piece of the discussion.
Yeah, totally. I mean, to me, I would rather have the guy that I feel very good at some point in the next 3 years is going to be a top 10 player in the league.
Yeah.
I've seen enough to where I'm like willing to say that, that he's going to be that over Zion Williamson, who has struggled to play.
No. So, I think that we don't really differ in our opinions, just sort of how much hindsight we're sort of allowing into like how much perfect hindsight we're allowing going to transport ourselves back to the draft. So, and frankly, like that almost comes up at the next spot as well. Like in terms of the guy who has been the third best player went on the floor, at least the last couple of years, he was bad as a rookie, but the last couple of years when he like DeAndre Hunter has been the third best player, but he's, you know, you talked about, you know, Zion always being hurt. Like, you know, DeAndre Hunter like broke his foot right before the NCAA and like was his foot.
Broke his foot right before the NCAA tournament in his redshirt freshman year and then came back for a sophomore year.
Yeah. I mean, so these are, and then he's just kind of, you know, picked up these little injuries, got injured in the playoffs last year, but he's been injured much of this year. So, yeah. So that, like, do you take that? Or, I mean, then there's sort of a group of guys that like maybe haven't been quite as good over their career, but have been more available. Like, I mean, you Darius Garland or the player type of Tyler Hero is not a guy that I would feel awesome taking there. Like, I don't know. Am I allowed to throw out names for guys like that I would like consider here based on what we know?
Yeah, go for it. I will say I think Garland's like pretty clearly the pick here.
I would frankly think about Daniel Gafford here. I'd go way down and
oh, you're on drugs taking Daniel Gafford over Darius Garland.
Okay, fair enough.
Wait, why? I have Gafford at like 12 or 13 on my board. Like I'm like down there on him.
All right. It's fair enough.
Wait, give me the Gafford pitch here over Darius Garland. I'm fascinated.
It's a straightforward, like high level rim runner, rim protector, big plug and play with most teams. Not a ton of like regression concerns. Like, is Darius Garland going to continue to make every jump shot? Is like, what is Darius Garland going to look like the rest of the season when he isn't playing next to another reasonably high level ball handler? Which I think, especially after Colin Sexton got hurt, I think, you know, the pairing with Ricky Rubio really helped him.
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think that the reason I would take Garland at three, like very obviously, is because
I would take Garland at three. I'm just sort of like, this is like, that's the universe I'm talking about.
So the reason I would take Garland at three is because I think that his game is particularly scalable to the playoffs because he can play both on and off the ball. Like, they are capable of playing him. Like, Darius Garland's never going to be like the number one option on an NBA championship team. So you're going to need to go get like a big wing to play next to him. Like, I think if you played him next to even like Chris Middleton or something like that, like his ability to play on the ball. And then, oh, by the way, Chris Middleton brings the ball up the court, initiates the set. Darius Garland sprints off of screens. Like Darius Garland came up playing as a two guard, and all of that off ball movement stuff is really translated to his game.
So you're almost describing him like you're thinking of him as almost a poor man Steph.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, no, I hadn't considered it that way, but I think that's a reasonable kind of archetype rather than to sort of drop him into like the point guard box.
I think that like he can distribute and play as a point. Like I think that like he absolutely has shown that he can do that this year, and he's been really, really good at doing that this year. But I like the fact that he's scalable both on and off the ball. And to me, those guys tend to be the kind of lead guards that can be successful in the playoffs. Like I think whenever they get like optimized Evan Mobley, like creating and handling the ball and like bringing it up the court regularly and like running sets and stuff like that. Like Darius Garland is going to be the perfect guard for him, I think.
Are you worried about this? And this is sort of the worry about Garland. Are you worried not just about the defense, but about his ability to withstand sort of the overall, you know, I think one of the things we've seen over the last years is aside from guys who are just like water bug elite, like jaw, like strength is like physical sturdiness is very important. Yeah. And it seems like, you know, later rounds of the playoffs, which is again what you're sort of thinking about at this top part of the draft, like you do have worries that, you know, he's gonna, you know, the there's gonna be an eclipse and you won't be able to see him anymore because he's small. And you know, poor on top of small, like not like sticky hands, like sneakily impactful defensively, like some other small guys maybe can get away with. So
he's like slight as well. Yeah. I think that like he's small and slight. He's a little bit long. Like I think he does a decent job like contesting, and he battles around screens to an extent
but he's not a nose to the ball kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Right. Totally. Yeah. Like it really helped him to be playing next to Ricky Rubio in the backcourt, so that he didn't have to take on the toughest assignment in the backcourt a lot of nights.
Yeah.
Right. Like that was really beneficial to him. Having said that, like, look, this is a dude that can look defensively. You're 100% right. Like to answer your question. Yes. I'm concerned, like very, very concerned about him on defense in the playoffs. I think that he'll like withstand like to the point where he won't like get hurt. Like he might wear down a little bit. Like I think that might be more what you're talking about is like just wearing down and like maybe shooting 42% from three goes to shooting 38% from three in the playoffs.
Well, it's also because being able to get to spots on the floor as you know, guys are allowed to be a little either because the game is called differently or it's players of a certain stature who can maybe get a little more leeway to be, you know, put forearms and maybe even hands on guys on the perimeter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just worried about his ability to get to spots in that, you know, so it's sort of like the continuum of guy we're talking about is like the top end is Steph and the bottom end is DJ Augustin. Right. And the guy who is just can't function in the playoffs for that reason. So, And you know, I think he's I don't want to say he's DJ Augustin, but like that's the continuum of player we're talking about. And so as the level decreases, you do start to worry about like that drawback. But I agree. I still think like of a bad lot, he's probably the guy you take third, I guess. Kind of hold like got to take somebody. Can't say I trade down. Because someone has to be willing to trade up, so and I don't think you'd give me 6 and 10 for three.
Yeah, like I'm just like trying to figure out like how many lead guards have averaged like 19 and 7 before their 22nd birthday, or like before like they turn 23. I mean, the number is not large. It's let's see here, we've got LaMelo, Luka, Allen Iverson, LeBron James, Kevin Johnson, Magic Johnson, Stephon Marbury, Ja, Chris Paul, Oscar Robertson, Derrick Rose, Damon Stoudemire, Isaiah Thomas, Russell Westbrook, Trae Young. Like that's the like sandlot that Darius Garland's playing in right now. And he's doing so efficiently, and he's doing so for a winning team. I think that like it's just hard for me to go past that, I guess. Like it's,
well, I picked him at three, so it's not like I'm yeah. sort of arguing against myself, but who you got at four?
Okay. Let's so here's where you're gonna yell at me.
Are you gonna take Cam Reddish at four? Seriously?
I'm not taking Cam Reddish at four. I'm like trying to decide between RJ Barrett and DeAndre Hunter at four still.
Really?
I am, because I think RJ has been good enough on defense to where there's still like a ceiling there if the jumper ever gets figured out. DeAndre, if DeAndre hadn't missed as much time as he had, I wouldn't be thinking about it. Like, I would take DeAndre Hunter. But DeAndre Hunter has played 97 games in 3 years so far, or 2.5 years so far.
Yeah.
That's hard for me. And then, this year he was not good, like, in the 11 games he played.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so I mean, RJ had some good games at the start of the year and has had one or two lately, but he's been
not good.
I heard about my opinion of RJ and like not having him in the player tiers this summer. I have not heard much about that recently, put it that way.
Yeah, like, look, I mean, he shot 17. He went like 17, 6, and 3 on 40% from 3 and 44% from the field last year. He played pretty strong defense, like as a 21-year-old or a 20-year-old, whatever he was last year. Like, that's really strong. This year it's not been as good because the shooting has regressed. Now the question is, like, is he going to be one of those guys that like starts his season shooting poorly and then like pushes up like throughout the course of the year? Because some guys are like that, like the number like kind of pushes up, because we've seen that in both of his first 2 years so far. If I remember correctly, like, he's gone from shooting like 32 in his first like 30 games last year and then ended up at 40. The rookie year, I think he was shooting super low and then ended up, you know, right around like what, 32, 33, something like that as a rookie. Yeah. I mean, like, look, the thing that worries me about RJ is like the lack of shiftiness in comparison. Like, I thought that he might be able to add some different stuff, but at the end of the day, like, he needs to shoot. He needs the threat of the jumper in order to make like his attack oriented profile work. Because if the jumper isn't there, he's not shifty enough to go like right to left, left to right, hesitation, step back, bam, right? Like, everything he does in terms of shiftiness is after he picks up the ball and like is Euro stepping and getting to the basket.
And also, he's not a good enough like finisher against a contest to you know, play that kind of big boy role, get a guy on your shoulder and kind of, you know, the thing that we're kind of we are anticipating Cade being able to do as he gets stronger. Like, he's already showing signs of that, but it's like sort of the
Cade's much longer as well. Is like it really helps. Like, Cade has like a 7 foot wingspan. Yeah. RJ has like a 6'8" wingspan, something like
but,
that.
I mean, but like, you know, with his build and size, he is someone who you would think would be able to physical his way to decent finishing. And that's something that has not really come along either.
So, well, yeah, it's like it's the touch through contact that he doesn't like have, it seems like. Yeah. Do I really like RJ Barrett has been like a fucking workhorse though, like throughout the course of his career so far. Like, he doesn't really miss games. Like, he's tough. His body takes the wear and tear. He's much younger than DeAndre Hunter. Like, I don't know. Like,
how sad is it for this draft that we're at four and we're like, hey, he's an innings eater.
See, this is what I said though. Like, from the jump, I was like, I got to four, and I was like, I don't know. Like, do you bet on Matisse Thybulle figuring out how to shoot? Like this is the first spot where I really considered Matisse Thybulle. I also considered Tyler Herro here. But like, do we trust Tyler Herro to hold up defensively in the playoffs? I don't know. Like, I guess he held up enough, like, for them to get to the finals as a rookie, right?
Do we trust? Do we also trust him as a consistent tough shot maker?
For
a guy who doesn't get to the basket, does not get easy points. That's sort of a tough profile. Like, if you can do that and be efficient, it's really good. It's really hard. And it takes a lot of, it's a player type I'm skeptical of, because it's like, when it's working, it looks great and everyone thinks it's awesome. And then you look at the numbers and this year he's making every shot, so it looks great. But it's like, sort of the height of this is like Donovan Mitchell, who like seems like he shot the crap out of the ball this year. And this is his first year where he's above league average efficiency, and it's only barely. So it's like, that's the diet you're trying to live on. It's a tough diet, but
it really is. Did you consider Keldon Johnson here? Like, he was my last guy that like, I really kind of threw into this.
I'll be honest. I don't totally get it with Keldon Johnson. So no, I didn't consider him there. Like, I don't know. I think a lot of what you said about RJ, like,
yeah.
So his best stuff is sort of that dependability kind of thing, and like, ideally, I'd be looking for more at this point in the draft, but there just might not be, unless you're willing to get wild and Daniel Gafford is going to be Clint Capella. Which, you know, is kind of why I threw the name out there. You know, it's
honestly, like, he might be Clint Capella, and I still would take RJ Barrett over him. Like, I think that's like the philosophical difference between you and I, for sure. Is like, I would just rather have the wing and like pray that the wing learns to shoot. You know what I mean?
I in general, I would too. I'm just like, okay, who is it?
Let's ask this question, and then we'll move on, and we'll kind of buzz through this group of players, because we've kind of talked about them enough at this point. If RJ Barrett, if you trusted RJ Barrett to be a 38% 3-point shooter by the time he's 24 years old, let's say, would he be the obvious pick?
Because it depends. It's not just like, you're also like, what kind of, Is he like an 18 to 22 usage guy, or is he a guy who can be, you know, league average efficiency, 38% 3-point shooter, and otherwise like fine at like a 25 usage and have some playmaking? Like, is he just a guy who is like a big defensive body and can stick an open jumper? Like, it's fine, but that's like on a championship team, is that maybe a fifth starter, but more likely a seventh guy? Like, where do you draft Pat Connaughton? You know,
if he's shooting 38 from three, right, with everything else he can do in terms of like, he can attack closeouts, he can get to the rim. Like, we have to hope that like the contact balance and touch through contact, like, maybe that is just not something he has, right? Like, he just might not have it, but maybe that can improve.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
But like, if those two things improve, like, I think that he can be like a third best player on a conference finalist team, right? Like, something like that, right? Like, he'd be at that point, he'd be like a 20 point per game, 38% from three, maybe 45% from the field, maybe 45% from the field, let's say, plus defender on the way.
So,
and that's like that's a good third best player on like a good team.
So,
right?
I mean, it's like, you're sort of describing the Jerami Grant we got last year. And I guess if that's what you're projecting, you take him there. Like, if you put it that way, then that makes sense. It's just those question marks are sizable. Yeah.
Yeah, they're real. I agree. I'm still willing to bet on him because, like, he's just a like crazy worker on some level. Like, he's really good. Like, cares about basketball. Like, has a great attitude about it. But like, I would say RJ Barrett at four for me. Okay.
Sure.
You're going to take DeAndre Hunter at five. Do you just want to do like a quick?
I think I'm going to, I've talked myself into Daniel Gafford, and you've talked me out of DeAndre Hunter being able to stay on the floor. So I'm going to take Daniel Gafford here.
Okay, give me a couple minutes on Daniel Gafford, because I think this is a wild pick.
No, I mean, this is, again, as much about the flaws of everybody else. It's just, it's not hard to see how, is he ever the best player or a linchpin of a top team? No. Is he a very useful, like, high-level rim runner, rim protector, gives you 28 minutes of plus center play a night? Can really, like, I don't want to say conform the anchor, be the anchor of a good defense, but is a strong building block of a good defense. Cause he is very, like, very good, like, good on the boards on both ends. Like, again, there's nothing sexy about what he brings, but this is more like a vote of no confidence in everybody else than it is. Like, I like Daniel Gafford, but him being this high is, and we have to remember that, like, it was genuinely shocking that he fell to where he did in the draft. Like, he was, you know, for much of his freshman year, he was a top 10 range guy. Like,
yeah, no, I ended up with him at, like, I think 20 or so. And then he falls to like 40 or whatever he fell to. I agree. That was a surprise.
And I think some of, like, you know, he has it seems like kind of the asthma issues, which kind of limited his ability to play longer stints. It seems like that has resolved to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's still only playing 23 minutes a night. Like, I'm unconvinced that he'll ever be more than like a 25 minute a game guy.
I mean, I think that's as much as them having Harrell as it is, like,
I'm going to do something that's really going to make you mad. So this is going to be fun. You're going to have like a meltdown on the podcast. Okay. Like, people watching this, I want you to just watch Seth's face as I say this. So far this year with Daniel Gafford on the court, the Wizards are 7 points worse than, like, when he's off the court defensively. And they're worse on offense, obviously, when he's on the court, because Montrezl Harrell is, like, very useful and valuable. Like, he has a good backup behind him. Like, does the fact that they are, like, 9 points worse when Daniel Gafford's on the court versus when he's off the court frustrate you? Or, like, does that give you pause at all? Because I know how much you hate, like, the idea of, like, team-based on-off numbers. But, like, I do think that is, for a
center, that is a number to consider. But, like, but on the other hand, like, on-off stuff this year is just going to be wacky.
It's horrible.
Yeah. It's just going to, because, like, the mix of who a guy is with and against, like, is so discombobulated by, you know, who's available. So, like, I don't know. Like, would that give me pause? Yes. At the same time, I know he's a good rim protector. So, like, put you know, good defensive point of attack guys in front of him, and you have a good defense.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's do you have elite? Is he the foundation of an elite defense without some really, like, high level perimeter guys? Probably not. But, like, if you have, you know, pretty good defenders around him, does that get you to, like, the number eight defense? I think that's reasonable. And I don't think anyone would say the Wizards have, like, a whole lot of, you know, their best defender otherwise might be Kyle Kuzma. Is that, like,
KCP probably?
Yeah, KCP, I would say. Yeah. So it's like,
yeah, you know, but Kuzma is not bad defensively. So I guess that here would be the final question I'll pose for you on Gafford. Do you ever think he will be a top 15 center in the NBA?
I mean,
because I can't take a guy that I think, like, I don't know that he'll ever play the minute load to be a top 15 center in the NBA, frankly. So like, I just couldn't take that guy here, but like, I understand what you're saying. Like, it's not like there's,
I mean, again, the flip side is how many of these other guys are going to be top 30 wings in the league, you know? That's
I agree.
That's again, it's if I believed in, you know, Thibault as an offensive player, if I believed in Hunter's health, if I believed in if I believed Cam Johnson was 3 years younger, like those would be kind of things I think about, but like I don't believe those things either. So it's sort of the kind of the most certainty out of a unpalatable bundle, I guess.
Okay, so I'm going to go Tyler Hero at six. We've talked a little bit about him. Hero has just been a really good tough shot maker this year, and my opinion of it is buoyed by the fact that the Heat figured out how to defend with him in the playoffs when he was a rookie. Like, he was not good defensively as a rookie, and they figured it out. Like, I think that in Miami, they will continue to figure it out. And he is very well insulated, surrounded by Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo, to where they're going to be able to make it work. And I think having him any lower than six here is going to look bad.
There's some similarities, I think. Make the case for me why Hero and not Jordan Poole.
I think that Hero, because I agree
with you,
I
pull very both from Milwaukee, by the way. So like,
and by the way, like I did not like, I was not super high on either of these guys coming in.
Neither was I.
And they've both like really become the tough shot makers. I have Poole like right in this range as well. I would go Hero. I think he's a little bit more creative off the bounce than Poole. Poole's stuff is like a lot of straight line, a lot of just like attacking toward the basket and making shots. And I think that he also gets more open looks than what Tyler Hero does right now, just playing next to Stephen Curry, playing next to Draymond Green. Obviously, he runs like a lot of their bench units and is tasked with creating offense whenever those guys are off the court. I don't love those minutes for him all the time. In the case of Hero, like I think Hero looks a lot better when he's running things as opposed to like playing as like a secondary guy. Like if I needed a secondary guy, I would say Poole. If I needed a guy that can come in and like get a shot, which I think is what the playoffs end up being a lot of the time, having another guy in there that can get a shot, I would go Hero. I do think that like this is a toss up. Like it's very close.
Sure. So I think that since this is not a player, that's not a player type I love. I think this is probably where I slot Hunter in. Is after you didn't already take Hunter, did you? No, I think this is where I like, okay, he can score, he can defend, he can score in a variety of ways, he can defend. He can defend multiple positions if he can stay on the court. And it's just like, okay, like the healthy best, slightly better than 3-and-D guy, because I think he has a little more with the ball in his hands than the typical 3-and-D guy. Yep. So I think that's, and also he's someone who, unlike, I think I feel more confident about the D than for a lot of guys who get, oh, I'll be 3-and-D guy. Yeah. Just because it's kind of every level he's been kind of pretty damn good defensively.
Yeah, totally. No, I think that like healthy DeAndre Hunter is very clearly like either three or four. It's just hard to project that at this point, given what we've seen from him thus far. Okay, I'm going to take Jordan Poole at number eight. Okay. That's my guy. So number nine, he's averaging like 19 points, shooting really well from three. He's become like a real creative force with the ball in his hands. I'm going to go Jordan Poole at number eight. You are up at number nine now.
I think completely different player, but I think almost similar logic to Gafford is I'm going to go Cam Johnson at nine.
Why Cam Johnson's terrific shooting and offense over Matisse Thybulle's terrific defense and questionable offense?
I mean, because I think that decent defense and kind of very good shooting is more playoff reliable than a guy who you know you can help off of. And at this point, Thybulle is a guy you know you can help off of. And I think that's, you know, maybe it's sort of been the extreme lack of, you know, perimeter creation that Philly's had the last couple of years, but it really seems like that's been a glaring thing in the postseason for the Sixers.
Yeah. No, I don't mind this pick. I had Cam Johnson at, it looks like 12 on mine. So you're kind of right in the ballpark. Like, I think it's in, like, there are a couple guys like on here that we've talked about that I know you're not like a super fan of. At number 10, I'm going to go Keldon Johnson. I am higher on Keldon than you because I think I'm just higher on this player type than you. I think I also, though, tend to buy into guys learning to shoot over the course of, like, by the time they're 25. A little bit more than you do. Like, I think Keldon's like attack oriented game and ability to like put pressure on the basket as a transition threat, as a closeout attacking threat. That's a more interesting player type to me than even like a Thybulle, especially given that I trust Keldon to be like a pretty good defender in big moments when the game is going to matter. Obviously he hasn't played a lot of those yet. But he's just such a competitive dude that, like, I think that he's going to make it work whenever those moments matter. He's averaging, like, 15 points and 6 rebounds, something like that this year. That's basically on par with last year. If you told me he was to take a pretty big leap as he learns to really shoot the ball over the course of the next few years, hopefully, I would not be surprised by that.
It's fair enough. I mean, you know, it's he's very much a your mileage my very kind of player based on sort of your projection of those things. I'm up at 11 now. Is that right?
You're up at 11.
I think I would like the guy. Like, I think one of my like list of, hey, a good team should trade for this guy players is PJ Washington.
I have PJ Washington at 11. I don't have him. I have two guys ahead of them that haven't been taken yet, but I think this is the perfect sort of spot for Washington.
The versatility, can play small ball five. It hasn't been awesome defensively for Charlotte, but like nothing has been awesome defensively for Charlotte. And you know, can step out on the floor, can protect the rim a little. I think is I think this is a player type, kind of the combo forward who can play some five that I think we've seen be very useful in across multiple situations in the playoffs. And so is he ever going to be a star? No. Is he going to be a guy who is like that son of a bitch when he beats your team in the playoffs? Like he's the kind of guy you can see that.
Did you have him ahead of the Poole and Hero group? Just knowing you, I can see that.
Man. Yes, I did. I did.
Yeah,
I, again,
that doesn't
I don't,
surprise me.
This is, I mean, this is again, this is sort of a that's a, this is a player type issue, and like if Poole and Harrow can't be tough shot makers, they kind of can't be on the floor,
right?
So you know, whereas there's a lot of different ways for PJ to be playable.
Yeah, no, I think that's dead right. Like the upside, like ceiling, is just much higher with Hero, like if the shot making continues.
Yep.
But like Washington, the floor is higher. Like he's going to play in the playoffs. Like I have no question about that.
Yep.
This is the gross one. So I'm up at number 12.
Yeah.
I have to decide between Matisse Thybulle and Cam Reddish.
This is a very easy call for me, but go ahead.
I know it is. Do I take the upside that Cam Reddish can actualize the flashes, or do I take like legitimate top five perimeter defender in the NBA? I'm gonna go Matisse.
Yeah,
I don't feel good about it.
Don't bet on the halo effect. You know, it's I think like Reddish is if like I feel like Reddish still carries like the hype of what he was coming into Duke. And there's just only been like, and every bit of flash that there's been since then hasn't been evaluated. Hey, that was a flash of something interesting. See, I told you that you could do that. It's like, okay, well,
how that happens. That happens more with Cam Reddish than maybe any player in the NBA. I think like Atlanta fans are so like, for whatever reason, connected to him and connected to the idea of him that I think that exactly what you're saying happens more with Cam Reddish than any player in the league, because they get so excited when there's like that confirmation bias of that little flashy moment, when in reality, like the game to game is messy.
Yep.
Right now. The question is like, he very clearly has like so much ridiculous talent and ceiling. Can he actualize it? I don't know. Like I frankly do not know if that's going to come at any point.
Yeah.
But Matisse Thybulle, I know, is one of the five best perimeter defenders in the league. If you believe that he can learn to shoot and he's like a really good kid, good worker, like all of that positive stuff comes into play with Matisse. Yeah, I think it's a reasonable bet. Okay. You're up at 13.
So my two kind of the two guys I'm looking at here are Nick Claxton and Lu Dort.
Yeah, I have Lu coming up here. I have Claxton a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And these are both guys that I liked pre-draft compared to where they were picked. I had Claxton, I think, at like 20 and Lu Dort at like 27 or so.
Yeah, I think I'm it's sort of the player type that I kind of like think has more portable value versus the guy who's like shown himself to be. No, you know what? Like Dort first kind of, you know, Dort held up well in his, you know, his one playoff appearance. Yeah. So I think I like, and I think there's a little bit of, I'm not sure what I'm doing, but this is working to that. But I think, I think I'll go with that. Like, I mean, they were, you know, a bucket or two from beating Houston. So I'll go with Dort, and, you know, you can never have enough wings who can do stuff.
And defend at a high level. Yeah. Like he's strong as hell. He can defend multiple position types. He's quick. He can defend guards. He can make life miserable for those players. He's turned into enough of a reasonable shooter to where I think that it's fine. I am going to take Cam Reddish at 14. I'm just going to take the upside swing. The question is, do I take Cam Reddish or do I take, so Cody Martin is my next guy after Cam Reddish. I would rather just take like Cam Reddish. That's one where I'm like, okay, I will take the upside swing on Cam Reddish over Cody Martin, who is like the epitome of a rotational wing that realistically is like a, you know, seventh man.
Basically. Sure. You know, having heard that, I think I'm at 15 now, or am I?
You're at 15.
15. Yeah. I think, Claxton, you know, he's, switchable defender. Maybe worry about kind of the strength inside, but like again, a switchable guy who can defend the rim a little bit and rim run. Like,
yep,
what you said about Gafford? Like, is he ever a top 15 center in the NBA now? Is he a guy who's going to be a useful, athletic, playable guy in multiple scenarios? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think he probably will be. I would like to see a little bit more feel. Like, I had Claxton in the 20s, to be honest, because the feel stuff has been a little bit concerning for me. Like, he doesn't seem to make awesome passing reads. Like, it's speed more than anything. Like, when the game rushes at him, like it will in the playoffs, I'm a little bit worried about how that looks. At number 16, I'm just going to go Cody Martin. He's been a consistent shooter this year. He's a tough positional defender. Perfect guy next to LaMelo Ball. Just knows how to play. His feel for the game is absolutely exceptional. He's going to play in the NBA until he's in his like early 30s. And that's a valuable piece. Cody Martin, 16.
So coming down to the end of our little exercise here, there's a number, like I'll just throw out some names of guys who I start to look at here. And it's like Brandon Clarke, Grant Williams. I think Nas Little is a guy you start to, you know, has shown enough that you start to think about him here.
So for what it's worth, the next guys on my list here are, sorry, I lost my spot. Brandon Clarke, Grant Williams, Chuma Okeke, Nas Little.
Yeah, I think so.
You just like said all of them.
Yeah, I think maybe I don't know. Is there someone else you'd put in for Okeke? I don't know. He's a guy who I really liked pre-draft, and is just kind of hasn't really had the chance to show much. So
he was really good in his stint last year near the end of the year, but that's really all we've seen of him like at a high level so far. And this year he has not been very good. He's been snake bitten by injuries. I think that they gave him like a conditioning designation a couple days ago not playing. Like, look, like I don't know what his right now, like I don't know what's going on with like everyone with COVID, like conditioning things don't necessarily mean the worst thing in the world, like whatever.
We've completely screwed up here. I just realized there's a guy who the guy I'm going to take here is Terrence Mann. I can't believe we've overlooked him.
I love Terrence Mann too. We probably should. Where should we have taken Mann realistically? Because I would have taken him over Cam Reddish.
I would have taken him in the Dort spot, I think. Very similar players, but I think I trust Mann's sort of overall feel more than I do Dort.
Okay, so you would have taken Dort. Would you have taken Terrence Mann over Cam Johnson?
No.
Okay, so you would have taken Terrence Mann. Where did you take Dort? You took him at 13?
I took him 13. So I think I would have taken him at 13.
Okay, I would have taken Dort 14.
Okay.
You would have taken...
I still would have taken Claxton 15.
Right.
And then you get to Reddish, right?
And then I get to Reddish.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I would have taken Reddish at 14 still over Dort. Okay. So then you would have taken Dort at 15.
Yeah.
I would have taken Cody Martin at 16. You would have taken Claxton at 17.
Yeah. Okay.
And now we're back at 18. And I'm up. I'm going to go Grant Williams. Grant Williams is a favorite of both of ours. Grant Williams is still a great positional defender who can play like that 4-5 role. The thing with Grant this year is he's shooting 45% from three. That continues, he's a definite playoff player. Like, definitely really useful guy if he's going to keep shooting like that. I don't know if he will, but I'm intrigued enough by the shooting jump that I will go Grant Williams here.
I think this is... Man, you know what? I'm actually going to like contradict myself. And really the two players I think about here are probably Brandon Clarke and Naz Reid. And man, I think just for the shooting, I probably go Nas. Like I know Clarke shot the ball really well his rookie year. Has been not only like hasn't shot it as well, but has also been a pretty reluctant shooter, which is a pretty big deal for my evaluation. So I think that I would go. Yeah, I think I would go Naz Reid here at 19. Do you hate that?
I do, but like I also like Naz Reid. I like him. You know, I liked him pre-draft. I think I had him like as a top 35 guy. I am going to go Nasir Little here. I think he's shown enough in terms of like energy, activity. There's enough shooting upside there. The guys that we did not pick that were highest on my board: Brandon Clarke, Chuma Okeke, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who's just been so inefficient and such a gunner like throughout his career so far that I think it's just kind of hard to project that.
Are we just completely out on like Hachimura and Jackson Hayes and Kobe White?
So Kobe White was next for me. I actually had Kobe White ahead of Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I had Kobe White, it looks like, at – I had Kobe White ahead of, like, Nick Claxton, right? I'm intrigued enough with what I've seen, but I think that, again, he's one of those guys where it's just really, really hard. It's really, really hard to be that kind of player and make it work in the NBA. And then Hachimura, like – Hachimura ended up just being like a, for me, the tiebreaker was, hey, he hasn't played this year. I don't know what's going on there. Right. This is a weird situation, it seems like. I'm just not going to go with it. You know what I mean? Darius Baisley is another guy. Jackson Hayes has shown some signs this year, like over the course of the last month.
Yeah, he's still, then Caleb Martin, like Kevin Porter Jr. is obviously in the news for the wrong reasons right now, but it's got obvious talent.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with Kevin Porter Jr.
Terrence Davis, like, and but yeah. once you start to mention like Terrence Davis, like okay, I think we're good here. Like,
might be time to move forward. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any other like undrafted, like O'Shea Brissett had a nice playoff game last year. Garrison Matthews has actually been like really good for Houston.
Yeah. Talen Horton Tucker, but like I think the idea of him is still like much better than the product we've seen.
Yeah. Like Garrison Matthews, I think I would legitimately take in the top 30.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. He's been really, really good. I think also I would be remiss, and we're gonna end on this note. My dearly beloved. The king of my heart, Max Strus.
Yes. I was hoping that's what you'd say. There you go.
Just the best, the most important person in the NBA, Max Strus.
I mean, you know, he could be your stunt double.
I love Max Strus. I love him so much. Seth, tell the people where they can find your work.
You can find me on The Athletic at Seth Partnow on Twitter, and I am starting a new show actually in about 3 minutes on the call-in app. I'm talking with you can also listen to it afterwards. I'm talking to Ben Taylor today about legacy and awards and how we talk about these things and why they matter and wherever else the day takes us.
Ben Taylor is just the best. I need to get Ben on the podcast. Just to like, is there like, it's funny. I mentioned Ben Taylor on the podcast regularly. Like, is there a better, like just person talking about basketball than Ben Taylor? Like, I don't know that there is. I love him.
Certainly one of the most reliable, this will be a good conversation people around.
Just like such a good person to talk to. Like, I don't even like have like the, like I'm not nearly as close as Ben with Ben as you are. But just the best, just such a good person. Seth, this has been fun. This has been the Game 3 podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back next week. We're going to do midseason awards with Fred Katz. And we're going to do the typical Penny draft podcast. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.